Guest on our program today, Jesse Green, state senator.
Good to be with you, Jim.
Good to have you back.
It's been a while.
It's been a little while since we wrapped up 23. Well, let's take a look back. First of all, thanks for taking some time to come in, because I know part of what's been going on even before the holidays is getting together, getting down to Des Moines, leadership getting together and starting to talk about what are we going to be looking at, what are we going to be doing. But let's take a look back a little bit about this year, some of the things that came out, and some of the what kinds of things have you been hearing about what's happened?
Well, you know, the dust has settled on quite a few issues. When I look back the last few years, it's just been a wild roller coaster ride, you know. But this is my first term, so I have nothing else to compare to. But when I look back, there has certainly been a lot of just transformative legislation, I would say. Things like property tax, I'm still hearing about that from some of the concern from the local government perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, from high growth counties, there's a concern that due to our limitations on property taxes on their revenue growth, that they're concerned that if they're in a high growth area, are they going to be able to keep up with some of the infrastructure needs of those mm-hmm. New areas? But I try to do my best with my limited mm-hmm. knowledge to assure them that there's a formula in place to accommodate them in those situations. But nevertheless, there is a fear there. And then on the more rural counties of the state, there's a concern, well, you know, our citizens demand the same quality services as a high growth county. How are we going to be able to do that with limited growth on our revenues? And at the end of the day, if you're a low growth, no growth county, I know that the new property tax mm-hmm. bill isn't going to really affect you that much. But that's a classic example where I think we need to wait about a year to let the dust settle and let the local governments go through their budgeting process to get comfortable and alleviate some of those fears. Yeah, before we do any more property
tax.
That's
been one of the big things, because it doesn't happen immediately. It takes time for all of that to work its way through.
Yeah, change takes time. Change is hard, and with anything. And so, I don't foresee any more property tax changes in the near future, at least for a year, because of that reason. Just mm-hmm. to let local governments work through it once. But then you have another policy like education savings accounts that mm-hmm. is real transformative legislation. There's fear out there. You know, is this going to crush public schools, and what's this going to do to the state of Iowa? So there's a lot of eyes that are on that, waiting for the dust to settle mm-hmm. on that, and we're starting to get some of the numbers with that. So the way I feel going into this next session is that I predict that it's going to be a fairly quick session. People are going to want to start campaigning again.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
And but also for the main reason, we want to see some of these policies get implemented and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And that'll be the big thing is, because you're obviously legislature always, people don't realize how much going back and making corrections or making adjustments as things start to work out. But for some of those things that came in, it's just going to take some time to be able to get that done.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, it's so exciting because already I hear in areas like Davenport and Mason City, you have new families that are moving into the state, for one, because we have a better tax climate than Illinois and Minnesota. That's what's happened in Northwest Iowa in the last few decades is when you have a state like South Dakota that doesn't have an income tax. Mm-hmm. Naturally, that's going to take quite a few assets from Northwest Iowa out from our state into South Dakota. Well, now we're in a situation where, because of some of these policies, we're starting to grab some of the people from Illinois and Minnesota to come to Iowa and raise their families. And that's what I think is so fun about this job, is to implement policy that attracts people to Iowa, because it is a great place to work and play and raise your kids.
On the ESA part, this is just the first year of it. We know it's a 3-year phased in. That's the big thing, is going to be a chance to see how this continues to come about.
Certainly. What I think is really interesting from this situation, you can see different counties and how this program is going to affect them. You know, if you have a great school, it's not going to affect you. For example, like Greene County, there's only 6 applications that were approved in all of Greene County. I don't know how many of those 6 applications were from people wanting to leave Greene County schools to a private school, But that didn't surprise me that it was a low number like that, because Greene County has an amazing school. Conversely, in Fort Dodge, Community Christian School, where I used to teach, their enrollment went up 22% from mm-hmm. kids coming over from Fort Dodge Public. That didn't surprise me, because there's a lot of issues that have been mm-hmm. happening within the Fort Dodge Public School System. And then conversely, here in Boone, nobody ever talks about the situations of the Boones, because they always think about the Dowling private schools sure. or West Des Moines. But look what's happening here in Boone, where you have low tuitions, and this ESA program is creating a new excitement within our community. Sacred Heart, for example, I don't think they received any new kids from the Boone mm-hmm. Public School. But Trinity did see a bump, increase in students. But now Trinity is talking about building a high school, increasing their teacher salaries, like... And just really cool things. And what
do they need to do to meet the demand?
Yeah. And so I'll hear some pushback sometimes, especially from maybe the Greene County community, about, they saw the ESAs as a threat to their school. But at the end of the day, I knew that it wasn't going to hurt them, because everybody loves their school, and rightly so. But that six families that qualified for those ESAs, what I like to push back on is... You have six families that are happy, you know, and at the end of the day, they're taxpayers too. You know, those families that want mm-hmm. those ESAs. And that to me is what is most satisfying about the school choice thing is at the end of the day, you're going to have happy families that find the right environment mm-hmm. for their kids.
Well, we'll watch that continue to grow again. The percent again, it's basically the stages that you're going through are allowing more people to be eligible
yep.
to apply for their children for it. And again, the company that's been handling it, I think they seem to have done pretty good.
Yeah. So there was 19,000 applications roughly that were approved, but we encourage people to apply for the program even if they weren't going to qualify, so that their name gets in the system for future years. I'm going to be really curious at the end of the day how many of those applications actually have butts in the seat, because mm-hmm. it was estimated that there's only about 9 to 12,000 seats that were available in private schools. And my suspicion is that a lot of those seats were just like here in Boone that were available. It wasn't the Dowlings and stuff. So
yeah.
So I think the cost is going to be a lot less than what we appropriated for the program, but we'll just have to wait and see here a couple weeks.
I know one of the big things on the property tax was the senior credits and the veterans, additional veteran credit and stuff like that. What kind of feedback have you been hearing? Because people need to remember getting that and what it actually works out to be, because there's a formula for it. Each person's a little bit different depending on your current tax situation where you're at.
Well, what you saw this year was the first step of a transition from tax credits to exemptions. And so most states in their property tax systems do have exemptions rather than credits. Iowa was kind of the rare in regards to the tax credits. So so we started with veterans and then with some of the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And... you heard some complaints from rural counties that maybe this would adversely affect rural counties because rural counties have a higher average age and maybe a higher percentage of veterans per capita versus other counties. And I get that concern, and I've heard those concerns, and I've relayed those messages to the Ways and Means mm-hmm. Chair. But so that's what you saw this past year was the first step of a change in philosophy.
Again. Takes a little time to implement all of that, mm-hmm. so we'll see how it all comes together. Let's talk a little bit about, we know that already with the session getting ready to come up, the governor's talked about eliminating income tax, and I know even last year you said, let's just watch how this works out here, because you do have your income tax reductions that are coming up, so you'd like to go to that flat tax rate.
Yeah, so by with the original plan that we passed, by fiscal year 2026, the state would be at a 3.9% personal income flat tax. And as with a lot of things that we've done, it looks like there could be some more room to maybe ratchet that down quicker or more significantly. Based on some of the numbers that I've seen, if she gets a little more ambitious with her plan, I think that that number could be more about maybe 2.5% by fiscal year 26. That's what a lot of people are speculating. But of course, the bright star that everybody, the North Star that everybody's wanting to go to, is a no income tax state. And I appreciate that that vision, and I appreciate that ambition. But when I look at the numbers, I just don't see how that's possible unless we raise the sales tax by percent to even eliminate it within the next 6 years. So we actually, in our revenues, we actually make more off the personal income tax than we do the sales tax. So I think at the same time, we need to be realistic about that. But I do appreciate the ambition and the vision.
Yeah, it's one of those, got to play it out.
Yeah.
See what happens.
It's but what I appreciate about what we've done is a lot of people are fearful that could Iowa be the next Kansas where they run into some big problems because we slash our revenues so much. But all this has been planned out, designed. Kansas was in the back of our mind that we don't want to be like Kansas. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of safety nets and triggers in there to make sure that we don't get too ambitious here.
Yeah. And the numbers we saw in December were pretty good, but they were just starting to show the first effects of some of the reductions.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was by design that we want to decrease our revenues a little bit. Like, we don't want to take more from the taxpayer than what is required to give them the services that they need. So there was roughly, if I remember right, about a percent decrease in revenues this year, and that seemed alarming to quite a few people on the other side of the aisle, but the reality is it was by design, so there's nothing to worry about with that. When you cut income tax, you're naturally going to have a cut in revenue depending on your economy. So, but by all estimated measurements, Iowa's economy is strong and stable. The sales tax revenue is outperforming expectations because of the reality of our economy here in Iowa. And so a rule of thumb is that your income tax is a more stable source of revenue, whereas sales tax has more severe dips and increases. But as long as you have a conservative budgeting, you can rely more heavily on the sales tax because you can withstand those ups and downs.
Okay. Well, and I know one of the things that, well, you did last year, you had several bills that you were working on, weren't able to get them all pushed through, but you still have work to do on some, I know, and I'm sure you've had some others since the last session you guys wrapped up there. And before you start, starting to take a look at a couple of different things you'd like to put in the hopper.
Yeah. Well, the most favorite part of this job is when you hear a constituent come with an issue and you see a path forward to make sure to prevent in the future whatever negatively happened to them. So that's what happened to me when I moved into Boone was my neighbor was sharing with me about her divorce situation that she went through in about 20 years ago. And there's a provision that's in code that says that a judge shall issue in a divorce arrangement that the mother, father, and child split the college tuition three ways if the child decides to go to college. And in the early 1970s, when that was put into code, it made a little bit of sense because divorce rates were low and college tuition was low, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But fast forward quite a few decades, now we have a 50% divorce rate and college tuition is high. So what you're seeing is what happened to my neighbor, which is in some situations, spouses will use that provision of code to harass their spouse, drive up the attorney fees on that spouse, knowing that the judge most likely will throw out that provision of code if somebody can't afford to pay that their portion of the college tuition. But so it's to me, it's one of those things, let's strike it out of code. By the age of 18, a child should be able to know if they want to go to college or not. Like, at what point are they able to make adult decisions? And so to me, it's just redundant, it's just not necessary. And so what my bill does is strikes that language out of code, and that a judge shouldn't be thinking about that when dealing with divorce situations. Yeah. So I got that bill out of the Senate last year. It's sitting in the House. I'm going to push that forward. Just the other day, I was down at the Flat Tire in Madrid, and a bunch of snowmobilers came to me, and they're like, we want to ride our snowmobiles on the bike trails down by Madrid. And they're right that Minnesota and Wisconsin have very flexible laws in regards to that. Mm-hmm. But here in Iowa, you can't ride a snowmobile and bike trails. Well, that'd be a huge economic boost to the businesses that are on the Raccoon Trail. There's a lot of bars that are just dead for 4 months out of the year. And so I'm going to file a bill first week of session that starts that conversation about how can we allow a good relationship between snowmobilers and the bike trails, and see if we can help some of those businesses out that are on that trail. Another bill that came up this year was school properties. In Waterloo, you see there's a situation where there's a public school that will not sell their school to a private school just because it's a private school. So there's a little discrimination going on. Mm-hmm. They would much rather, that public school would rather tear down that public school than sell it to a private school. And to me, there's something inherently wrong with that. And so I'm going to file a bill to start the conversation that private schools should have the first right of refusal on a public school property before it gets demolished. So that'll be an interesting bill that I'm going to come up with.
Generate some discussion, won't it?
Yeah, that will.
All right, so those are some of the other things. What are some of the other things you've been looking at here coming up?
One of my biggest concerns when I look at the state is nursing homes. Mm-hmm. I've heard this from many
people. Probably a lot of people lately.
Yes, yeah. And I think that is the number one issue that we are facing going forward, as well as our workforce shortage that every state is facing. But nursing homes, we're going to see more closures. There's just no doubt about it. And it has a lot of people scared. But I want to reassure that there is a demographic issue here that puts this in perspective. We have more beds per capita than any other state in the nation for nursing facilities. That's one thing to keep in mind. You can say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, if nursing homes are not at 90% occupancy rate, they're not as profitable as they could be. That 90% mark is where most nursing homes want to be for profitability. Mm-hmm. Right now, that rate is at 66%. Then you add in the workforce shortage where your workers are getting stretched thin because they have to go to multiple facilities and do that traveling and whatever. That adds to that problem. Last year, the state tried to address our part of the pie, which is increasing Medicaid reimbursement rates. And so you saw us try to fulfill our end of the situation last year. People need to prepare. There will be more nursing home closures around the state. About a month ago, you heard a report about our inspectors mm-hmm. in the state, and I caught a lot of emails on that, and I have yet to get a good answer as to some of those questions that people have, and which is concerning to me. And so I'm going to continue to do my best to push forward on some of those answers. Yeah. So that's what's on my mind.
So, yep. People aren't afraid to let you know.
Tell me. It doesn't matter if you agree with me or not. I'm here to listen and to give you the best answer that I possibly can.
All right. Well, we do know that you said this first term, so you're up. You have already announced you're going to be seeking re-election. Already did a fundraiser. With Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, it was.
You were one of the first to support him.
I was the first legislator to endorse him. I was so proud to endorse him. When he won Florida by 20 points, whether you agree with him or not, to win Florida by 20 points, and he didn't have a chump for an opponent. Like, he had a strong opponent. There's something special about that guy. And that's when I made my decision, is when he won. We saw the same thing here in Iowa with Reynolds when she won by 20 points. But, you know, there's just something special about those two people, and I admire them so much. They inspire me to be a better leader, and so that's why I want to endorse somebody that inspires me to be better mm-hmm. myself. He graciously did my fundraiser here a few weeks ago at the Wild Rose Casino in Jefferson. It was such a fun night. There was 350 people, 315 meals served, and everybody had a great time. We had music. Reynolds was there, Secretary Ag Mike Nag, so we did a fireside chat. And so what a fun way to kick off your campaign, raise a little bit of money. And so I'm set up strong to hopefully compete well next year. I would sure appreciate one more term to serve this district.
First time in your new district to run in the new one. Again, a little bit of Story County, all of Boone, all of Green, and what? down a little bit?
Yeah, all of Guthrie County, all of a quarter of Dallas. So I've got Perry and Minburn. And so about half the district is brand new. So this past year, I've been doing the best that I can to get down to Perry and Guthrie County specifically to get to know more people down there. And
it's a big area to cover.
It is, but geographically, it's about the same as the old one. But half of it's just brand new.
You get to go meet new people. There you go.
It's awesome.
New people, new issues.
I mean, it's remarkable when you go to each county, and each county has a different positives and negatives that they deal with, and it just makes my appreciation of government increase so much. We do have a great system here in Iowa for people to have their voices heard and hopefully their problems dealt with. So.
All right. Final notes coming up. Well, we do know Phil has already announced he is not seeking re-election, but we've had at least Chad Bain put his name out there.
Yeah.
And it's still time because primary is a ways away. You could have multiple candidates still showing up. So.
Well, to me, in this environment, time goes by really fast. And so on that point, it's going to be sad to see Phil leave. It's interesting that every legislator has their strong points and weak points, and he really brought a lot to the table for me, especially as a freshman. He was a mentor to me, even though he was younger. It's going to be sad to see him leave. On the flip side, Chad Bain, I admire his family and him so much. They have a lot to bring to the table, and it'll be fun to see how things shake out. But I think he'll do a good job.
We get started, January 8th? Governor will give her address that week. And that's what the week I call the pomp and circumstance week.
Well, yeah, so that to me is one of the most special nights of the year. I can think back to every year that I've been in office to when she gives her speech. Like, everybody's in anticipation of what she's going to unveil as far as her vision for the state. And then, of course, it's going to be sad. I'll be sitting with my House rep with Phil Thompson, and it'll be a little sad knowing that that's going to be the last time that we listen to a speech together.
But and then we have the judiciary after that, and then we'll have the guard comes up after that to wrap up that first week. So
yeah,
it's going to be a busy week.
But, yeah,
but I know the big thing is it's a big election year, so you guys want to get done in a hurry. So.
Sure,
we'll keep our fingers crossed that works out for you. That way.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for taking time to visit with us, and look forward during the session to continue to keep updated on what's going on.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jim.